Hello and welcome to episode 65 of the Classic Pinball Podcast. My name is George, and this episode is a continuation of the conversation we started with Tommy Skinner. Unfortunately, I was unable to connect back into the Zoom meeting and told them to march on. There was a little bit of behind-the-scenes talk about me, which I've included in this podcast. So sit back, grab your favorite beverage, and listen to me getting thrown under the bus. But I get a little bit of vengeance.
George is, as George says, he's old.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Give him show all the time. He gives himself show, so that's fine.
Yeah, you got to give each other shit. It makes for a good show.
Exactly. I'm getting confused too now. Maybe I'm old.
Wait a minute. I know what's going on here. You've all become idiots.
You have a little bit of time, or you got to go? What's your schedule like?
No, Tom? You're fine. My girlfriend's still at soccer practice for like another hour, roughly.
Okay.
We're going to go grab dinner when she gets home. Okay. Ugh, I don't got anything else tonight, except I was maybe going to repin some connectors. You know, the exciting life.
Well, that's exciting. I do that for something fun to do with myself. So,
yeah, I wish it was more fun. Oh, man, I hate that stuff. It feels so good when you're done, but man, is it a tedious process?
What do you use, the ratcheting crimper or?
Yeah.
I like that one.
The first game I ever did, I did every connector on a Seawitch I had years ago.
Oh boy.
Before I had good tools by any means. And I literally did the whole thing with needle nose pliers. Oh, it was awful.
Oh, needle nose pliers.
Yeah. Oh, it was not good. I mean, it worked. I did it all, but man, was it just pain in the ass. My fingers were so sore.
While he's waiting to come in, so how many playfield swaps is this for you? Four? Or you have more?
I think so. I'm trying to remember. I think that's four, and then I'm getting ready to do another Stargazer and a Cheetah.
Well, so these are CPRs?
Right now. Cheetah is CPR, Stargazer is Great Witch out of Canada.
Oh yeah.
I'm still waiting. I'm actually doing two more Stargazers. I sold that first one I did, and then another guy who wanted to buy that one just hired me to build him one as well. So I'm doing
What's your base Stargazer? What are you using for a Stargazer then to start out with?
My first one was a Stern Pinball, the one that I did and sold already. The one I'm doing for the guy who lives in Nevada, I think. I'm doing a Meteor, and then I plan to do another one for myself because I'm making decent money on the one that I'm building.
Sure.
Basically enough to pay for most of my parts for another one, at least. Out of a, what did I pick up? Electronimo.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. I found it really cheap. So I was like, wasn't originally planning to do another one for myself, but Cruiseman still had a play field available of Stargazer. And I think I paid 100 or 125 for the Electronimo. So I was like, yep, we'll convert that.
You there, Tommy? You lose Tommy. Where is Tommy? We have George. Do we have Tommy?
Yeah, sorry, you cut out there. Yeah, I heard you asking about my process, but then you cut out.
Yeah, and it sounded all garbled. Do it again, Dave.
Okay, so I was gonna ask you about your process. I know you've done a couple of these conversions. Yeah, I keep getting internet connections unstable. It's weird. A couple of these conversions, like taking an old, early Stern game like Pinball and like Tronimo, that aren't as desirable as like a Stargazer and you know, those nice Sterns that people are collecting these days. And I just want to see your process on painting cabs. Do you send that out? Someone does it for you? You do that yourself?
Dave. Hey, Dave.
Yo. Yeah.
Dave, something's wrong with your connection. Really bad.
All right, maybe I'll redo this meeting again. Should I try that or what? I think it's something with Zoom.
Yeah, I say let's give that a shot because it's breaking up pretty bad.
Yeah, right, it's really a bad connection.
All right, I'm gonna leave this one
and try another one.
Yeah, I'll send you a new meeting.
Hello.
Okay, we're both here. George said it's not letting me in. You finish it. It's like, okay, well, I can do that. But I said, George, try one more time, John. I just sent you a latest one. Try it again. If you didn't hack in, then we can just you and I can dance, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, we're waiting for him, or even if he comes in or not. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, cabinets and repainting and so forth. So that's something you do in-house, or you send out?
No, I do it in-house. It's the bane of my existence.
Oh, I feel for you because I like I send that stuff out to a guy that does a really nice job, and because for me I'm ultra picky about that stuff, and I just know it would take me, I don't know, way too much time to get it done right, because you can tell the really good repaints are, for me anyway, I go down and feel the edges of the paint on a game. Do I feel any edge or do I don't feel an edge? Because I want to, like, originality. You don't feel an edge from, you know, paint to, you know, different color paints. And the guy I was, you know, doing before, I think he's going to retire soon. He would do the repaint, use a pinball pimp stencils, and then he'd do very, not too heavy either, very light, but enough to get color. He'd throw in some matte clear over the whole thing a little bit, then buff that down a little bit. And that gave it so that you wouldn't feel an edge.
Oh, you know? Yeah. No, I don't do that. I actually like feeling the edge.
Okay. Okay.
But I've also done a lot of my stuff to where it's not, I intend for mine to look not original. Like I did my Stargazer with a metallic blue paint, so it had like a sparkle to it.
Okay. Gotcha.
I did not speckle the cabinet on Bolton because I don't like speckled cabinets. I think it looks messy, and it was used to cover up factory errors to begin with.
Yeah.
I think it was a design thing. So no, I wanted the white to be bright white and crisp. Like that was my full intention.
I agree with you on that one. That bugs me too about some Bally stuff, and they kind of hit or miss back in the day. It's kind of left over from the 70s where they wanted to cover up again factory defects and give it some pre-dirt before it's
exactly.
It's so like kind of worn.
Stencil edge isn't perfect. It's okay. It was just part of this or that.
It's kind of like, you know, buying a pair of worn out jeans that are all the fashion, or buy a pair of brand new jeans that have no pre-wear in them. You know, it's like, it's almost like that. But I agree. I the speckled stuff from Bally is like this brown speckle or gold speckle. It just looked dirty. Yeah. And when I do got a repaint done, I would actually do, I'd have him do the white as well. Like we just did he's done a Superman cab for me. A Rolling Stones, especially the Rolling Stones. I noticed I have original Rolling Stones I'm doing for a customer, and their paint's really nice, original, but I'm looking at that one versus the one I had done by my buddy. And my buddy's is a lot cleaner looking. It's like, why is it so clean? Oh, there's no speckle. And I'm looking at the old one. It's like, I prefer the cleaner white on there. It just looks clean. So yeah, I agree. I like originality to a point, but sometimes if you can improve upon it, you know, there's definitely a case to be made for that, you know, improving upon the originality. If you can kind of, because I like doing with my restorations as well as, you know, optimization of things, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, I agree that LEDs don't always look as great, but if I'm putting a game on location and it's going to be on, I want LEDs in there. Like, I left my Viking incandescent because it's on for an hour at most when I'm at home playing it. It's going to be okay.
Right.
Something I'm putting on 12 hours a day. Like, yeah, I'm going to put LEDs in it for the benefit of the machine.
Yeah. If you're going to be, you know, if you're going to be having a game on location, like you said, it's going to be on 24/7, all that light burning and heat, you know, bad for everything, bad for artwork, bad for electronics and that stuff. So yeah, LED is the way to go. What I have been doing, because I was, you know, for the longest time when LEDs were first coming out, I definitely was not a fan. I was not a fan of just the stark bluish white color from the LEDs. And they were kind of cheap looking and just kind of, for me, they didn't complement the game. This is like when they first were making them, first were coming out several years ago. And then I waited until Comet came out with these, the warm retro, And I said, okay, these are getting more towards, I'm considering these now in some aspect. So what I've been doing now on most of the games, new and old, is I've been going, putting them in the GI. So for the GI circuit and all these games where the bulbs are kind of hidden underneath plastics and so forth, or I want some decent light, but I don't want that blue stark white. I want like the warm, a little bit yellow to it, a little bit to mm-hmm. be like original. I'll put them all in the GI, and then I definitely will. I still go incandescent on the feature lights, on the inserts. I still do that. Cause the reason being for me is I like that nice decay of incandescent on and off versus a stark 1-0 of a diode of an LED, you know, for the feature lights. So I do a hybrid. I don't know if I'm one of the few that does that. I don't know. I think most people just do the whole conversion LED and call it done.
Or no, so that's how I have my Viking. The inserts are still incandescent, and my Harlem too. Yeah, those ones I only changed out the GI to LEDs.
Because and you've probably seen this too. Because I think some people, you know, either they're restorers haven't been around for a while, or just like fix it guys, whatever. They won't clean the insert underneath. They'll just put a super bright LED and punch through the dirt. You know.
Mm-hmm.
All you do is you just clean off that under the insert really well, put a regular light there. It's plenty bright. It looks great, you know, with a nice, you know, a nice socket or a redone socket or brand new socket, and you're good to go, you know? So, well, that's cool. We do the same thing there. That's awesome. That's awesome. The Voltan. Let's back to your Voltan resto.
Yeah,
I was looking at the laundry list of all your all the stuff you put into it. That's like quite a bill of materials there.
Yeah, I mean, it was essentially like I think the only original thing really in it ended up being the coin door, and I still used a new coin door skin on it. So it, like the I guess the backside of the coin door was still original, and then the wiring harness and the transformer, everything else was pretty much new. I mean, yeah, there was not much reuse in that game, but that was partially because the original was just in such bad rough shape, it would have been almost impossible to use things from it.
Did you, since it was in a barn, did you have the whole mouse nest stuff and all that kind of thing to deal with too, or no?
Oh, it was disgusting. Yeah. Like it literally just reeked. It was, I think January when I picked that up last year, I know it was below freezing for sure. And we still drove with the windows down in the car to get it home. Like it was gross. Yeah.
A friend of mine did a resto recently on a game, similar game. So his brother brought it to him, didn't take care of it at all. It was in a wet basement with a flood and blah, blah, blah. But he got it in his house, and it's like, why does this smell so bad? He looked inside the cabinet, there's like white and black mold growing and fuzzy all underneath the floor of the cabinet. And so he basically put on a whole hazmat suit, just vacuumed all that fuzz out of there, and then dumped a couple boxes of baking soda on it, let that sit for like a week. And then surprisingly, it actually cured it all. No more stink. It actually got rid of all the moldy stuff, and it worked out that method he did. So I know, did you kind of do the same kind of thing or replace wood, or how'd you get rid of the stink?
I actually ended up using a completely separate cabinet. So this was, I still have the original Voltan cabinet sitting in my storage unit for some reason right now. I should really just throw it out, but I do plan to take the coin door from it. That's about the only reason it's still sitting there. A friend of mine in Indianapolis was selling a Valley Lost World that was literally just sitting in a arcade as window decoration because it had been completely stripped of parts. So I was able to get that, and it still needed, you know, woodwork repair, and obviously needed to be sanded and repainted, but it didn't smell like it had been housing rodents, which was my number one priority. So yeah, it was actually a different cabinet than the original Voltan as well.
Mm.
And I, for the first time too, all the previous cabinets I've done, because I think it was my fourth playfield swap, but my fifth cabinet. No, it would have been my fourth cabinet because I didn't do the cabinet on skateball. I only did the playfield. But I've always just sanded everything down for the artwork. And this was the first one where I stripped all the paint using acetone. And I will be doing that from now on in the future. It is way easier.
Okay. So with the acetone, though, are you putting gloves on and stuff for that stuff? Or I heard that's not good for your skin.
I assume it's not. Yeah, I did put on gloves. So, but it was, it didn't sound too crazy harmful from reading the instructions on the can. And it's also one of those things where it's not like I'm doing this as a full-time job. I'm not stripping a cabinet every day. It was literally a couple hours of one day, and I probably won't do it again until next year. So okay. I don't think I'll have a whole lot of overexposure, but yeah, I did still wear a mask. I still did wear gloves, had on sweatpants and long sleeves. So I was trying to be as careful as I could be, you know.
Cause I heard also the paint from that time frame could have lead in it too.
I would assume so. Yeah. I'm assuming sanding it was every bit as dangerous as using the acetone.
Right.
Because even with a mask on, that dust just gets everywhere. So yeah, this was and I still end up sanding the wood, but as far as like that paint with the lead in there is that's some tough paint to sand. It is, paint used to be very durable.
Yeah, that's why, you know, back in the day when they painted with that lead paint, they didn't have to really go too heavy on it. That's why there was no, you didn't feel an edge, because they just a quick, you know, throw down a big brass plate, clank, spray, move it on, next guy, throw it down, spray, and then out it goes without even, you know, even thinking about it. So there was so much pigment in that paint for whatever reason, they didn't have to really lay it on thick.
Yeah.
You know, oh, and what did you do about that? About, did you, do you like the crisp lines, or you like the little original overspray kind of stuff? What do you go for?
No, I like the crisp lines. Yeah. Okay. That's why I like the look of it. I like the feel of it. I like it to obviously look like a brand new painted cabinet. Okay. I don't want someone to be like, oh, wow, is that just a really nice original? That's never like the intent I'm looking for. I want them to look and be like, oh, wow, someone spent a lot of time. Not that the other one doesn't mean you spent a lot of time. It means you spent even more time, probably. I want mine to just be visually apparent right away.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's why they make chocolate and vanilla.
I've said that about stuff when I have restored it and gone to sell it. It was, I restored it to what I wanted and I am selling it, and if you don't want it, that's okay. You don't have to buy it. That sort of thing. That's the Stargazer that I'm going to be building for someone, which is, this is the first game I've been hired to do this on, which is just sounds weird in my head still. And we have to wait on a wire harness from Sean at Third Coast, who's currently going through the process of moving, so all of his stuff is delayed, which is no big deal, but, and you know, the guy who's having it built being super understanding about everything. But it's just weird when it's not something that I'm doing for myself. I am, you know, much more stressed about it because I want this person to be very happy with it. I was like, well, you know, the first one I did, I used this metallic paint, and I changed this, and I did white and white displays so I could alter them to be a different color if I wanted. You know, what do you want yours to be? I used clear posts instead of blue posts, like an original. And he's like, oh, well, I trust you. And I'm like, well, yeah, I get that you trust me. That's why you hired me, but it's your game. So I want to build this to what you want, you know, and let me know. So it's good that I've been given the flexibility to kind of do what I think is best. But at the same time, if I'm paying someone to do something for me, I want to be able to tell them what I want. That's kind of how I view the right as the customer. So we'll get it all settled out as the process goes on.
And again, this is Stargazer, or which game is this you're talking about?
Yeah, Stargazer is the one that I've been hired to build.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. You know, speaking of the Stern stuff, is I had a beautiful, you know, cheetah that I got. Oh, I've got a couple of them. I got
a cheetah. I've watched your YouTube videos. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, I've got the cheetah sitting in my garage that I still haven't touched yet. And I've watched your videos on cheetah several times.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So you heard about the whole finding that thing on eBay. I think it's eBay years ago, when I didn't even have a cheetah. I don't know if I said it in the YouTube channel or not, but I didn't have a cheetah, but I saw the thing on YouTube on eBay, it was like, I don't know, $150 for a new old stock Cheetah Playfield. And this was before people even knew what the Cheetah was. And they go, okay, oh, yeah, that's mine. I'll take that. You know?
Uh-huh.
And then sent it out to my buddy Bill Davis to clear it. And then just waited for the Cheetah to come, you know, cross my path. And that happened a couple years later. And boom, made a nice one. And then that eventually wound up with Rob Burke bought that from me a couple years back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So so you must know about the prototype ROMs and the sound and so forth. If you heard me talk about that, that was a game changer.
My Cheetah in the garage is actually a blue cabinet prototype Cheetah.
Cool. Good. So you got the ROMs.
I assuming it has those ROMs because it's number 80 on the serial number.
Awesome.
I literally got this delivered like 2 months ago and I still have not opened it yet because I have the new play field. I'm kind of in the process of letting it cure and then the process of school started up. So I've just been incredibly busy. And when I come home, I want to just sleep and not work on a game. So, not work on any more games that I have to with keeping my 25 machines on location going. So I haven't been highly motivated to open this thing yet, but it's getting to the point now where I'm like, oh, wrestling's coming up. I kind of want to do this before wrestling season. So I've got like a month that I need to do this in.
Yeah, so for school, so refresh my memory. So you're a wrestling coach?
And yeah, also... I coach wrestling. And then I taught social studies for my first 7 years. And now for the last 7 years, I've been the director of our alternative learning center. So I work with like at-risk kids, mostly seniors that are not on track to graduate. I'm in the building and my classroom is a computer lab. And the kids are doing classes online, but I'm there with them to help them do them, basically.
Sure. It must be tough to keep them not distracted by having whatever handheld device they got on them. Yeah.
Yep. Considering our school gives them all iPads and then we're in a computer lab and most of them have their own cell phone. It's it is screen overload and distraction overload and it can be frustrating for sure.
I've heard some teachers, now again, this would be in-person class, but some teachers say, okay, when you come in the room, all your phones, I'll take all those in a big bucket, please. And you don't have them on you. The kids can't use them. And you get them at the end of class. I've heard some teachers
we have that in our school. It works to some degree. To some degree, it doesn't.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, it's a different generation with that stuff.
It's just learning is changed and the system can't adapt as fast as society has. It was very easy for a teacher to tell me something and have me listen because that was my access to that information. Reality is I'm no longer the access to the information for a kid. So the things I really need to teach them are critical thinking skills, how to find good information and stuff like that. But the reality is state standards and classes aren't set up for that now.
True.
It's one of those, you know, I just crack up when I'm a relatively young teacher in my mid 30s compared to a lot of the other teachers. And, you know, my mindset is if I don't know how to do something, let's say with restoring a pinball machine, what's the first thing I do? I Google it and I find an answer. You know, exactly. I find someone who's done it.
Yep.
So for teachers to tell these kids they're going to need to know these things, this, that, and the other, it's really hard for me to support that because the reality is they don't need to know it. They need to know how to find it.
How to find it.
That's the reality. What they need to know is how to be, you know, a responsible person who shows up on time and a courteous person who treats others well. And those are just not classes that we have in school because for years, those didn't need to be priorities, or you were supposed to learn those things at home before you ever came to school. And those are societal changes where one parent tended to be home with the kids, and now we're very much of the generation where both parents have to work to support families. So
yeah,
sorts of issues, but just a lot of things have changed in society, and we're not the best adapted to quickly change like that.
You know, things like you said, critical thinking skills, you know, wonderful. That'll serve them through all their life. That stuff, life skills, like how to balance a checkbook and how to, of course, you know, all this stuff that you don't really, the value of money and how, you know, what is money and that kind of stuff. And all these things that aren't really, another thing, in like a physical education class, which never got taught to me as a kid, and I don't think it still is today, is how to lift properly so you don't wreck your back.
They've got those classes now. Yeah, they've got weight training and all sorts of those things.
That's good.
Yeah, but
wish I did.
Absolutely.
Because these games are getting lighter, and I'm not getting younger. So,
no kidding. I recently ordered one of the Multimorphic P3 games, and I think I read that they're 360 or 380 pounds.
Yeah, there's a lot of metal in those things. It's a
Curious to see how that is to move when that shows up in a few weeks.
Wow. Well, what made you want to buy that?
I have enjoyed it every time I've played it. Dating back to, I want to say like 2012 or 2013. I know Jerry had one at Expo with a very early Lexi Lightspeed. I found it very interesting. They had it set up. They were running a tournament on it. It was a one ball tournament, and the way they had it set up was both flippers could be controlled from one side of the machine. Each side of the game has three flipper buttons, so you can program it. So like yellow fires the left flipper and red fires the right flipper, something like that. I can't remember exactly how it was set up at that time, but that was how you had to play, was with one hand. And me working with kids with disabilities, that kind of intrigued me as a sort of giving them access to something that would have been very difficult to play before for them. And I have several kids who only have function in one arm. So that just intrigued me. I thought it was neat that a manufacturer took that sort of thing into consideration, made it a possibility. And then I really fell in love with it when they released the Cosmic Kart Racing at Texas Pinball Festival one year. And I went back the next year, and I still really enjoyed playing that. But the thing that always kept me away was there's a very high barrier to cost entry, barrier to entry cost with the P3. It's a more expensive machine. And the reality is I don't tend to put really expensive machines in my house, and I'm out of space. So when I'm buying new stuff, I'm doing it with my operator mindset and putting it on location. And it was just hard to justify that cost and not knowing how successful the non-traditional pinball machine would be, and them not having a licensed theme that is just reality. Licenses aren't better. That's why companies have largely produced them. So some things have changed, obviously. Prices have continued to go up from basically every other manufacturer, and their pricing has remained about the same. So just cost-wise, it's become more of a balanced option, and they've made more things available with the release of the Heist play field, Cannon Lagoon play field, Cosmic Kart Racing, Lexi Lightspeed, and now they will be releasing their first licensed game with its own new modular play field. I ordered mine just about a month ago, and was told 12 to 16 weeks, and I was told by them the license would be available so I could have it shipped with mine. So I don't know what it is. Jerry's been super secretive about it, but that makes me excited as well. So I not only at this point have I run out of location at home, but I've also run out of location in my garage, in my shed, in my storage unit, and at my location. So the P3 seems like a really good option of how I can get more games into a limited amount of space now too. So there was a lot of reasons that kind of worked together that made it like the perfect storm. And that's actually what I, when I sold the Vulton Escapes Cosmic Doom, that is a, where that money was going, was into the P3 system.
You're preaching the choir with the room situation, having room. Cause I kind of lost count of the games I had, but last count is around 60 or so, or 70.
Oof. Yeah. You know, yeah. You gotta be out of room.
We have a modest house, you know, we don't have a mansion, you know, and I even have storage where I got 20 games across the street and heated storage, climate controlled. But then again, it's my biz too. It's all I do now is this restoration business. I got rid of the corporate gig, about a year and a half ago. And so now it's like, I was doing both of them in parallel, working about 80 hours a week total and everything. And then it just got too much. And I said, I'm successful enough now, after doing this since the early 90s, that now it's totally, it runs itself, kind of, the business keeps coming in all the time at a regular basis. So I just keep getting games. People keep, customers keep calling, hey, I have this game, I'm moving, you know, it's like, well, I can't offer you top dollar. I can offer, you can get more money than I'm going to offer you, but I'm not going to, you know, case the joint like some weirdo might. So, you know,
yeah.
So usually it works. Usually I get it for a decent price where I can kind of do my thing with it and make my piece and come up with a nice game and it all works out. But I tell you, when two games go out, three or four come in. You know, it's kind of like that.
Yep. I 100% know exactly what you mean, because every time I sell something for good money, I find all these like cheap projects again. And then I'm like, well, I got rid of one. I can buy three projects now.
And speaking of projects, I got a call from this guy who had, he had a Bally bow and arrow and a Gottlieb Spirit of 76, two decent pins, you know, EMs, but you know, I said, well, I can't really offer you much. You know, he said they were in a barn or something, or a garage for years. And so, you know, I got pictures, they were dirty. So I said, you know, all I can really do, I don't really want them. I'll give you $100 a piece for them. I thought he'd just say no. He said, oh, come and get them. I says, okay.
Oh, geez.
You know, so I go there, there's a tarp over them, and they're outside. And it's like, then I see the play field glass, and the Spirit of 76 is all broken. It's like smashed. And there's a mouse nest in it. And it's like, oh, do I really want this crap? You know? So I kind of, it was like an hour and a half ride up. They had George meet me. So George brought his car. So we got both games out of there, paid the guy. And it's like, okay, I'll just store them. Now I have really no room. Now I'm like, can't work in my tech area. I'm like, can't even walk in there. It's like, what? I just want to clean them quick and make a quick buck on them, a quick flip. I'm not usually a flipper. Usually I'm a restorer. But for these, I was thinking just flipping them. Because, you know, even if I do my whole thing with them, what can I really get for this stuff? You know, I can't get mega bucks for them. So why, you know, my time is better.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, better spent elsewhere. So just make a quick couple bucks and someone else can take the project. Well, before I can even do that, the guy emailed me and say, hey, buddy, I need those games back. It's like, this is the first thing. Really? You know? And he said, they're not mine. My uncle had them and he's pissed off. It's like, okay, dude, I'll pay you what you have into them. So I wasn't going to totally be a jerk, you know, but I definitely want to make up for my time for going up an hour there, hour back, working on
vacuum,
so cleaning it up, putting a couple locks in it. So I said, well, you know, give me $400, come get them and I'll have them. I'll store them, you know, well, I can only get them next week. Fine. I'll store them for you too. I'll store them. So give me $400 back cash and you can have them back, you know? So he did. He came back, got him, and he's a nice enough guy. But that was the weirdest freaking thing ever. But thank God he got him, because I really didn't want him anyway. Because right on the heels of that, someone was offering me a killer deal on an 8-ball deluxe that I really had no room for. But now I have room for that, so I've made a great trade. 8-ball deluxe for those two EMs, sure thing. Price was really good too. So yeah, it's cool being in this for so long and just these deals come across you, especially when you happen upon this Voltan. Like I've never played one of these nor seen one of these in person. I've just seen pictures on IPBD. But I'm looking right now at the picture that you did. It's gorgeous. I mean, especially you did the clear posts, you got clear rubber on there.
I really like that just because I think it helps light up these older games so much better.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. They don't have a ton of GI in them. So
right.
If you can use those clear posts and the clear rubbers, it really does let a lot more light through.
And these are all like the Bally ribbed style, but they're clear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I do like to use the correct style of post on the games. When I did Stargazer, I used clear as well, but I used the faceted posts to match the old Stern style.
Okay. And when you do your stand-ups, I see you get the white stand-ups. Did you actually buy the whole switch, or you just kind of changed out, you cleaned it up and changed out?
I put in brand new stand-ups on this one. I reused the rollover switches for up top. But yeah, I brand new stand-ups on this one because the other ones were disgusting. Pop bumpers were brand new, everything except for the under the playfield bracket. Those were all polished and tumbled and everything I could do to those. My spinners were brand new. My spinner switches were brand new, but the spinner bracket was actually reused because I didn't have Well, they just honestly weren't that bad. I put them in a little evapor rust and tumbled them and polished them, and they turned out fine. So those were are original.
I think you did some creative license with the spinners.
I did, yeah. I took the playfield artwork, and I basically, you know, the female and the male character on separate sides of the playfield near the spinners, and I just sort of isolated those, and I had them printed on holographic decals and attached them to the spinners, so they tied into the character they were by on the playfield.
Nice. Yeah, it looks those gorgeous.
Turned out really good. It was funny. I actually had a couple other people who own Valtons who saw my for sale ad reach out and ask me if they could have a set, because I think I got like 20 of each one of them printed when I did it. Just I figured in case anything ever got damaged, I might as well have them spares for the game. And then there's something I did want to point out or talk to about on the game is, so if you're looking at a picture of the back glass, you clearly have Valton, at least who I think is Valton, carrying a girl, and they appear to be flying away from a burning city, which I think is Chicago. If you look kind of closely at it,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. What I never really noticed or like thought about is if you look to the top left of the back glass, there's another hand reaching down and like,
yeah, I just noticed that
guy.
Yes.
So that's when I'm like, wait, is that Valton? Is Valton pulling these people off of this planet, or is the main guy in the middle Valton? Like,
I think it's really
confusing.
Well, you know what? It looks like the main guy in the middle is Valton, because he got a big V-shaped thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. But then, whose hand is that, and why is it there?
Like, it's some hairy ass dude.
Yeah, and he's got a ring on the finger. Yeah, what's like, that character is not depicted anywhere else on the playfield, so I'm interested. And really what sold me on the artwork, to be completely honest, is that at right by the flippers, you have two skeletons wearing like military jackets drinking blood from a cup.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think the artwork on there is amazing. I don't know.
It's well, you know cool. Why? That's you know, that's Mad Dog Christensen, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm zooming in on the ring right now. It's a blue square with a red circle in it and like a cross or an X through the circle. Yeah. So I don't know what the symbolism is there. That's what's on the ring.
Cause you know what? He's into some really occult crap. You know, he was really into,
that's what, you know? I've heard. So I'm kind of curious as to what that would be. I did see some sort of interview he did or commentary on the game at one point, and he was basically like frustrated working at Bally at this point, and I think that's why he had the depiction of the person leaving the city on fire. Like, he wanted to leave Bally at this point.
Okay, you know,
I think I remember reading that somewhere. And then I suspect when I posted this for sale, I posted it to Pinside as well as to, you know, all the regular Facebook groups and marketplace and stuff. And somebody who I'm assuming is related in some way, shape, or form to Dave Christensen, because it was Keith Christensen, contacted me and said, hey, I actually have the prototype artwork for that hanging in my game room. And he sent me photos of the prototype of the original back glass artwork. And it was really neat to see that.
Is that something you can get, were you tempted to get that made up for you by the...
No, I just wanted to see it. When he said he had it, I just said, hey, I'd like to see a picture if you have it, you know. And it was actually done in a circle instead of a square.
Okay.
It looks incredibly similar. It's just watercolored, I think, or done in marker. I'll send it over to you so you can check it out. But
sure.
Yeah, it was neat to see.
I was checking out, since I never heard of this guy. What's his name? Kuz? That's the guy's name?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never heard of him before, but I started looking through his all the backlights. I was like, wow, what a treasure trove of like it.
He saved so many things. And if you contact, like I said, if you contact him and email with him, he's obviously English is not his first language, but he's very fluent. And basically, as long as you're willing to buy it, he seems to be willing to work with you on doing something.
So there's really no prices there. It's kind of like you just talk to him what his prices are.
It's been all over the board, but I'd say roughly like $450 to $480 total, like including the shipping. And his packing packaging is amazing for everything that he has shipped to me.
So, so you, that's why you say you're better off getting two, because
you'll save some money on the shipping.
Okay. And would you say the quality is really close to Newell stock, or is it a little bit?
I will send you a picture, but I took a photo of my new old stock Viking back glass sitting directly next to the mirrored version that I got from Q's, and the colors were like such a perfect match. It blew my mind.
Wow.
It was really impressive. Yeah.
And even in the game lit up, it looks good too. Like that with lights behind.
Yep. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, for sure.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. Cause now
I don't fully understand his process. It definitely looks a little different from the backside than other prints I've seen, but I'm very impressed with it.
Is the backside one big kind of white layer, or is it a big black layer
back there? No, it's like colored. It's interesting.
Okay.
Like it doesn't have like the silver layer like you would usually see on another back glass. It's almost like a faded version of what the front looks like.
Okay.
It's interesting. Huh. But the light blocks look really good, you know, where you got your player numbers, your ball counts, all that stuff coming through. It all shows up and matches the originals.
Well, thanks for that. You just responsible for me to spending even more money now on this stuff. So appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I've done the same. So.
Yeah. I just started looking at that stuff and, here we go. Cool.
Oh, I see right now. Did that come through? That was the prototype artwork.
That's great.
Yeah, it was neat to see that and how that would have gotten converted, but I wasn't sure if that would work. I'll try to find the back glass pictures for you later. I know they're further back in my phone, but I knew right where that one was.
That's awesome. What a find. That's great. Great to have that.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool that it was saved there as well. And as you can see on the prototype image that I sent you, you see the white kind of like splash or whatever explosion around where the hands are connecting and around the outlines of the bodies. That was what I had converted to mirroring on the back glass.
Makes sense.
As well as in the final back glass, instead of just being like a sunset in the sky, it's a lightning storm. And I had all the lightning converted to mirroring as well.
It looks like the lightning bolt is a lot more prominent on this than the regular back glass.
Well, I think so. Yeah. I can't remember directly, but I know there was a bunch of small ones on the there are the big ones, but then the big ones I left is yellow on the back glass, but I had all the small lightning in the background converted to mirroring because the yellow matches the play field, and then there's a bunch of like smaller lightning bolts in the background of the sky.
So does Kuz do? He does a lot of mirroring, but sometimes if you say, hey, I want this back glass, can you do it in mirroring? It's something that you would actually have to go create and then send it to him, or something that he does for you?
We just kind of work together. Like I told him what I wanted and he mocked up some prototypes. Okay. I also just redid Stargazer. That's why I have all those back glasses in my living room. He let me go through and design a mirrored Stargazer since this guy was hiring me to build one, and I told him I had just done this Fulton, and I sent him pictures of it. I asked if he'd want me to contact Kuz about doing a mirrored one, and he did. And then since I knew so many people were and are building scratch Stargazers, and you know, when people see that you finished one, they kind of start contacting you and asking questions. So I just put out there like, hey, I'm doing another one, I'm getting this back glass made, does anybody else want one? I ended up ordering, I think it was 8 or 10 of them.
Wow.
So yeah, that's why I've got all these boxes sitting here and people are picking them up at Expo. So
fantastic.
There's going to be a bunch of mirrored Stargazer back glasses going out around.
That's great. Yeah. I have a nice original Newell stock one in my Stargazer, and I wonder how that would look with the mirroring. Get me curious now. I'd like to see, does he have it on his site?
I don't know if he added it or not. I can, I definitely have pictures of it because I did open one of the boxes already. But I basically did like the word Stargazer and then all of the all the constellations in the background. Like he can do really fine mirroring. So it turned out really good.
Nice. Yeah, I bought a a funhouse one for my wife's funhouse I did for her years ago. And I decided to get the, you know, the real back glass, you know, with mirroring from CPR. And I thought it was going to be the real mirroring. And I got it back. It's like, well, this is nice, but it's not what I thought. You know, I wanted like the mirror. So I was kind of like, eh. But now that, you know, now I can get real mirroring now. Now I'm thinking, well, should I get that? I don't know. I might just let it go. And for next, like I'm doing an 8-ball deluxe restore right now. And the back glass on it is nice, but it's got a little bit of flaking. So this might be something I should get his 8-ball deluxe back glass. If it has, I would assume if it comes with mirroring from the original, he's going to do the original mirroring it too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The original stuff, just like it comes that way.
Okay.
Adding it to things that I wanted it added to, but
so I have to order.
It's one of those things where it's like, if you're going to spend the money on it, when I look at it compared to what CPR's mirroring looks like, and again, I'm glad CPR. I'm glad they do everything they do, and I appreciate it. But this is just one product where, if you really like the mirroring, to me, it's worth the extra money.
Yeah, I totally agree. They do a great job and a great service for, you know, they've definitely filled a need out there. They do awesome stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I bought a bunch of play fields from Kevin. I still have a whole stack of them, so that I have to get through one of these times soon. Oh, there we go.
Stargazer. Yeah, nice. Be able to...
Oh, yeah.
So all those constellations, instead of being white ink, they're all mirrored.
Okay. That's neat.
And I got the sword edges are mirrored. It turned out really good.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I might have to order one of those. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I look at it. And I'm like, man, I like the mirroring. If I'm going to do it, I might as well do everything. And I wasn't sure he'd be able to do the constellations because it seemed like such small amounts of white ink to me. But he said it was no problem. So.
Wow. That's great that somebody does that out there. It's great these days with this. Years ago, and if any of this stuff, you had to go do your own thing. And now it's such little cottage industries on everything you want for these things. It's amazing the stuff you can find.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even the classic Stern, the old plastic pop bumpers, you can get off of Shapeways now because Swink's redesigned them and they're on there to be 3D printed. And it's just, yeah, there's a lot of different people that have contributed to keeping these machines alive. And it's really nice. I've always wanted to do a homebrew game or a retheme, and I just forgot about it till I just walked into my spare bedroom here to look at my pinball parts stash. I forgot I just bought a Whitewood Stargazer playfield from some guy in South America that's already been sanded down, and I've got that I want to work on a retheme. Not that I don't like Stargazer, but I was like, hey, I already know how to work on this game, and here's a playfield that was cheap, and it's already sanded down, so I can redo the art however I want.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
that's kind of something I've got in the works for the future. So we'll see what happens with that.
That's great. Oh, George chimed in. He wanted me to ask you about artwork wise. Do you like Fathom or Voltan artwork better?
Fathom. Yeah, Fathom's just my favorite. So I love the ocean. So the theme works better as far as the art goes. But like I said, those skulls on Voltan are drinking the blood, or it's very neat but very different. Although I guess the mermaids are murdering a scuba diver, and it's a pretty violent depiction. It's done in a very pretty way on Fathom.
It's very pretty. So if you gotta go, it's a good way to go, you
know? Oh yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it doesn't quite live up to Fathom's artwork for me, but it's up there. And I think, and not that obviously it's still going to be almost impossible or very difficult for people to find a Voltan to go and play. If you encounter one, give it a chance, or check out the stream that I did. I posted the video. It's on our YouTube channel, The Slippin' Podcast. The gameplay is a lot better than I thought it would be, and a lot better than I think people give it credit for. I think the scoring was incredibly balanced, and it gave you kind of multiple ways to get there through collecting your planets and building up your bonus and multiplying it, or trying to light a spinner and, you know, getting a couple of good spinner rips in there. But the scoring was very balanced either way you took, which I think would make for a good competitive game, but, you know, not the most fun machine back in 1979, walking into location, being difficult to understand what was going on. So I think that was just kind of what hurt it.
I was reading about it too, and they had about 300 or so on location at, what were they called?
Aladdin's Castles.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And so
that was the very first thing I checked when I picked it up was to see if it had the rare prototype soundboard. It did not.
Yes. So no, that's a no.
Nope. It was a no. There's supposedly 4 to 6 of them out there that ever had it.
Okay.
From what the Bally employee could remember who had installed them on location. And this one, since it was coming from Ohio, not the Chicago area, I figured that, you know, it's still the Midwest. It easily could have traveled from Chicago to there, but I didn't have a ton of faith in it. And no, it just ended up being the regular soundboard. And it's that era of like Dolly Parton and Harlem where it's,
right.
The sounds are all the same. They just kind of play them in different orders and sequences. Sure. So they sound a little different. But yeah, not the best sound package by any means. It's basically just really pretty, but again, balanced rules. I think it would be a good competitive game. And another thing I like for, you know, tournament games personally is I like difficult short playing games. So you're not waiting forever. And
yeah,
that was totally absolutely agree. This one.
Totally agree. Cause when I started my classic league several years ago, it was a good 5-year run. And we just did all old school games, anything up until 1984 and earlier. And the reason why, because there was a huge league in this area, New England Pinball League, that,
oh, yeah.
You know, it covered many states around here. But they were playing on mostly all, you know, 90s DMD and Stern stuff. And so, let's play. And I just think you had good players there. They're playing all day on ball one. And it just took all night. You only got to play like 3 games, being there all night and one time a week, you know, every week. And I said, I'm going to do it differently. So I did this all old school, use my collection. And I went out and looked around for other people I knew around that had nice collections too, of all old school. And we go, made it every 2 weeks. That way you're looking forward to going and playing them versus it's every 1 week. It's almost an obligation. And it was great because we got to play 6 games a night in a tournament format. The games would go so quick, you could do it. And in about an hour and a half, to 2 hours, you were done. So you get there at like 7 o'clock at night, leave at 9, and go home to your wife or girlfriend or whatever, and it was all good. So it was a good run.
Yep, I totally get it. That's the appeal of the classics to me is, you know, good gameplay, different skill sets. But I like you said, you start playing those modern games and you're sitting waiting for the other 3 players sometimes an hour in between your balls, it feels like.
Yeah, then what happens sometimes, you'll, where's so-and-so? Oh, he went to go get a beer, or he went to go to the bathroom. You start losing people, you know? And,
yeah.
Oh, beautiful. It is a stargaze with mirroring. Nice.
Yeah, that's how I did the name up on there. And then some of the gypsies' jewelry is mirrored as well.
How about the ball, the Stargazer ball? Is that mirror or is that white or silver?
It's still got the coloring in the middle of it, but the like reflection part off it has a mirrored sparkle.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you can zoom in there and see it pretty well.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. George also wanted me to ask you about, are you on the list for a Fathom 2?
I am, yes, technically. I was not going to order one. I saw it was announced and I was really tempted and I thought it was really cool. Neat to see it done, but I already have one. And I thought about operating it, but I was like, I don't need to do that. You know, we've got enough other games down there. It's not like we're dying to get a game in there. And then my partner who has a few games at the location and we've actually purchased 2 or 3 games together. To, you know, share the cost on, since they're not cheap. He messaged me and was like, hey, I think we should get one of these. What do you think? And then I'm like, well, I've only got to pay for half of it then. And basically the deal was like, yes, if it earns well, we'll keep it there. I don't think it will earn well. I think Fathom's a very tough game, honestly. So I don't know how well it's going to do. But if it doesn't do well, he wants a Fathom anyway, so he'll buy my half out and take it back home to his house. So we do have one coming, yes.
Okay, that's good. Cool, because George and I were talking about, it's like I have my Fathom here. I like to compare, I mean, I wish it'd be kind of nice to have someone that's close by that I could, we could actually go to their house and do a podcast from there and do a new Fathom podcast with the old school, new school Fathoms within close proximity, compare how they play to each other, you know, that kind of thing. Be kind of fun to do.
Yeah, I should be able to do that eventually. I am not counting on any sort of dates. I know Australia is under further and worse lockdowns than we have ever been still.
Yeah, I feel bad for those people.
All sorts of issues there. So it's I don't expect it. But again, all we had to pay was our deposit. And we basically looked at it like a calculated risk. We knew they haven't shipped very many celts. But we figured with the amount of money our deposit would be, if they fail and they never succeed and it goes under, well, we're out a couple hundred bucks each, you know. So not that that's nothing, but we figured we could risk it.
Yeah,
and if it works out, we get a cool Fathom, and hopefully we get to share it with people and play it. We put a spooky Halloween on location a couple weeks ago, and we've got Godzilla coming hopefully this week, from what we've been told. So we like to put new stuff out there and let people enjoy it. And if it can earn a little bit and earn its keep down there for a while, we'll keep them hanging out. And if people don't like them, it's kind of the nice thing that we can we've got a few spots we literally keep there for rotating purposes on purpose, you know, try different things out and buy and sell some stuff and keep new games coming in.
Yeah. Not that we talk about too many new game stuff, but sometimes we'll go there sometimes for, you know, some varied interest. But speaking of some of new stuff, I saw the Godzilla reveal and play on that. It looked really interesting, looked like a fun game. And also noticed that all of a sudden people are dumping their spot in line for Halloween now, because I guess they're gonna say, well, forget Halloween, I want a Godzilla. I mean, I don't know what, that's what I'm thinking it is, but it just seems people are, you know.
I think part of it is it's happened with almost every spooky pinball game, is people get really worried about missing out and they order initially, and then the reality sets in of like something else gets announced, like Godzilla, or they just realize like, oh man, I ordered this late in the day and I'm not getting it for 18 months. And even though you don't have to put all that money into it right away, you start to want something else right now. So I think it's a combination of those things. I've definitely seen the spots up for sale. My buddy Mark is the one who bought the partner who bought Halloween and put it at our location. I have nothing to do with that game financially. I'm just there to kind of do the maintenance and make sure it keeps operating and playing. And it was there 3 weeks so far, and it more than doubled the best month we've ever had for any game. I was really, really blown away.
Wow.
And people seem to be loving it. So it's been pretty neat. They just did a big code update this past weekend. I streamed that for like 3 or 4 hours on Sunday.
Cool.
To kind of show people what changes were made and what additions were put in, et cetera. But yeah, I think Spooky's got a hit on their hands. I'm not a huge fan of the Halloween movie series, and I'm enjoying the gameplay. So it shoots really well. I think they did a good job on the geometry and the physics of the game.
Cool. I can't wait to play it at some point. It's going to be out there. Maybe it might be at the Pentastic show coming up. Who knows? You know.
I'm sure that Joe will have one there.
Yeah. Yep. Well, cool. Anything else about Voltan or any other thing before we wrap up?
No. Voltan was cool. Like I said, I intentionally streamed it, put it out there. I did sell it. I did sell it for my asking price. I know when I posted it, a lot of people gave me a bunch of shit. And I on one hand, I completely understood it. On the other hand, I knew what the other two restored machines had sold for.
Yep.
And I was selling mine cheaper than both of those, because the reality is I know the reputation of both of those restorers and how long they've been doing it. And I haven't been doing it as long. And I respect that their skill is at a higher level than mine.
Yep.
So I thought where I priced it was fair and accurate, and it sold within 48 hours. So
exactly. You gotta love the haters on, you know, especially on pin side. I call them, you know, there's a lot of good people there, but there's some gammas there. They're jealous. They're jealous.
I got less of a negative reaction on pin side than I did on Facebook this time, which kind of surprised me. But I think the reality was, like, when I sold Stargazer, I priced it high, but people know what Stargazer is. Like you said, you've been doing this for a very long time and you've never seen a Voltan. It's really rare. So I think a lot of people just had no clue what it was. And then you add in the fact that I did some customization to it to make it different. Like, it is a one of a kind. There's yes. There's not another one with those spinner decals. There's not another one with the mirrored back glass. There's not another one with seven-digit scoring. So, you know, it was literally a one-of-a-kind machine, and the guy who bought it told me specifically he appreciated that about it. He's been collecting a few years, and he's gone to only collecting classic solid-state Bally's, and he had one spot left, and this was the game he wanted. Nice. So it worked out
great.
Perfect.
That's great.
Yeah, and he's actually possibly hiring me to restore a Medusa for him because he was so impressed when he got it home and got it all set up, and he was happy. So, you know, that's kind of the bottom line. The way I looked at it was I got to play it. I got to really enjoy it. I got to save a game that was literally sitting in a barn, and now somebody else can enjoy it. And I built it to last, so it should be enjoyable for decades to come. And now I can do some more of them, hopefully.
That's speaking of Medusa, it's one game I've had that in my restoration queue for myself for, I don't know, at least 10 years. I even have a Newell stock play field. There's already clear coated waiting to go into it. I got a beautiful backlight. It's going to be a beautiful game, but I really want to do it. But I just feel like, you know what I don't care for is the games where they have like an extra flipper button for that stupid thing in the middle that hits the ball out.
I just wish they put Medusa post.
Yeah. I just put a freaking pin there. You know, I don't want to have another button to push, you know, so
another button to push, another mechanical thing to break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus those posts are about impossible to find now.
I get it. They are. I think, but maybe Sphinx is doing that or someone.
Somebody's got 3D printed ones out there. And then I just saw literally like a day or two ago, somebody on Facebook has started casting them in whatever resin plastic or whatever. So somebody has took one and made a mold of it and is actually doing them the original way now.
I'm actually speaking of the little post thing with the flipper with the little button there, whatever they call it. I don't know, but I have a Fireball 2 that I picked up.
Yeah,
I picked up for very reasonable money, but you know, from this, you know, I don't know, this guy found me and said, you know, he got it, didn't know how he got it, and you know, whatever, however that story that goes, but I just picked it up and said, okay, price is cheap. I didn't really look at that, but look, nice cabinet, nice back glass, playfield looked nice. Looked at it under closer inspection. And whoever had this game previously, they got rid of a little devil doodle bug thing in the middle. They pitched that.
Oh, yeah.
They cut a big hole in the middle and they put a Fireball Classic platter spinner thing right there in the middle of the game.
Weird.
So weird, you know, and it's kind of like, I was like, oh, how am I ever going to sell this game as it sits? But then I'm thinking, well, the doodlebug thing is useless.
Yeah, so that's cooler to me. And I actually like Fireball too. I had one for a while. I think that's a really underrated art package on that game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still thinking of selling it. I'm still thinking of selling it as a project, as a nice project, you know, for reasonable dough, not too crazy. Because I mean, I like the artwork, but I'm not. I don't know. It's kind of like
I had it on location for about 3 months, and that was enough Fireball 2 for me. So I get it.
Okay. Yeah. You know. I don't know. I like Fireball Classic. Fireball 2. I don't know. I just wouldn't mind moving it on. I guess one of the games that I'd rather pay attention to. I don't really think restoring that one up. I don't think there's really a lot of a big money at the end of the rainbow in that game. I don't think there's enough people that want that or want a really nice one. You know.
No, that's not one that people are looking for heavily restored. Not yeah, that it wouldn't get decent money, but it's, yeah. I had a friend recently ask me about painting cabinets, and he has, God, I want to say maybe it was like that, what's that one game, 1776 or one of the old EM Patriotic games.
Is it a Bally?
Yeah, game? I think so. Oh, yeah. Maybe it's Bally Freedom, or I can't remember which one.
Yeah, Bally Freedom. Yeah, it looks like 1776 Bally Freedom. George Washington in the back glass or something.
Yeah, it's one of those. Like the cabinet artwork has an eagle on it and stuff.
Yeah, that's the one.
I was like, I was basically telling him, I was like, dude, cabinet painting is the most frustrating part of doing a restoration.
Yep.
And there's no way I would do it on a game that I didn't either first off plan to keep or two, know that I could sell for good money. Like, it's just not worth it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I tried to explain to him like the time and effort it takes to do a full on cabinet restoration. And you know, he's like, oh, I just want to kind of experiment. I was like, if you just want to experiment, man, just like tape it off and paint it yourself.
Right.
Like, do a full restoration on it.
Yeah.
It is not worth it unless it, like you said, again, it's your keeper game or it's a business opportunity. because they are, it is frustrating unless you have a, you know, an HEP like high end automotive paint setup and decades of painting experience, which I have neither of. So it painting a cabinet for me is a dreadful experience, but when they are done, you know, it turns out and it's nice.
It does feel worth it then. I just had a Superman cabinet done. So I actually have three Superman games, and all of them had, you know, decent play fields, but definitely some wear. So I basically shipped them all out to Bill Davis. He touched them up, clear coated them. It came back looking like Newell stock Superman play fields you can't find anywhere. And then I had, you know, three decent sets of plastics, but one really nice one. So I said, well, I definitely need three new sets of plastic sets. And CPR didn't have them. No one had them. I contacted Kevin and said, Kevin, any interest in doing a CPR Superman set? Yeah, sure. Well, I got them. Send them over. You know, so I made a deal with him. I got a couple sets out of him for my games. So, and they came out great. I mean, he did a really nice job on them. So now I got like this, you know, I have a beautiful backlash for it, a nice repainted cabinet. The rails that on the Atari game, the Superman game, and they a little bit of rust on them. They rusted easy, so I had to like took them. You can't get them anywhere, so I took them to a buffer, buffed the crap out of them, and they came out nice. But yeah, I don't doing the kind of repaint. It's like it's not for me. If I can have somebody else do a good job, I'm going to pay them to do it. So I totally get it.
Yeah, if I had someone in local that I knew who could, I would probably do the same thing. But for now, I'm that guy apparently. So
yeah, you're
getting
you're
ready
guy.
To help a friend. One of my friends, I gifted a Space Rider kit to, and I'm getting ready to help him do the cabinet for that one. So that'll be my next cabinet up. I don't think I'm going to do the Cheetah cabinet because it's got the original blue prototype and it's actually in good shape.
Yeah, why not?
I think that one's worth keeping original. Sure.
Yeah, my wife was chiming in. She's my artist. So the one I had all repainted, that one came up. That one needed bad. It was all scraped up really bad. But the other one I had, it just had a couple of nicks and dings here and there. She actually, you know, we cleaned up. She actually touched up. It looks pretty darn nice. So if I can take an original cabinet and with a little bit of touch up work, make it look really presentable, I'm going to do that instead of like tearing off all the artwork, you know, unless it's really bad up. We'll do that, you know. Oh, I think I lost him. Did I lose you? I lost Tommy. Where'd he go? Signing off from the Classic Pinball Podcast. I'm your host, David O'Neill, Dr. Dave. Good night, folks.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E! Yeah, Dave!
Dave!
Right.
Dave? Dave's not here. Has your ship not come in? No, I mean literally. Is your pinball manufacturer back-ordered because they can't get the parts to build your game? Is your distributor without any games either? Have no fear. Dr. Dave is here. Dave has the following pinball games in stock, ready to go. Paragon, Supersonic, Skateball, Fireball 2, Kiss, all those from Bally, from Stern Electronics, Stingray, and Seawitch. How about a NASCAR Dale Jr.? For more information and an up-to-date list, contact Dave at Dr. Dave's Pinball Restorations. Your ship hasn't sailed, it just hasn't come in.